Before I get into my more formal remarks, let me just react a bit to the remarks of the senator from Utah. He's a great colleague, a very cordial man. I've really enjoyed the 16 years I've served with him, especially on Judiciary Committee, but I'm going to use an unsenatorial word for one of the arguments he used. The word is wow. The notion that 70 senators would not be briefed on something that we're voting on. And the notion that the creation of the Intelligence Committee, which of course I'm a member of and which I support, is a justification for having 70 senators not knowing what they're voting on is a very bizarre interpretation of why the Intelligence Committee was created. It was not created as a replacement for the United States Senate when it comes to voting on the fundamental laws and rights of the American people. And that's the best they can come up with, Mr. President, on asking us to vote when 70 senators don't even know the fundamentals of what the program's about that this issue is addressing. It's incredible. But let me get into the merits after apparently we've been lumped into by the senator from Utah as part of the black helicopter crowd. I assure you the coalition in this country that has concerns about this bill is much broader than any such characterization. A number of senators came to the floor prior to the 4th of July recess to debate the FISA legislation, and more debate has occurred this week. We've heard arguments for and against the legislation, and senators have cited a variety of reasons for their positions. Several have defended the bill by arguing that the legislation includes improvements compared to the Senate bill we passed earlier, and of course I was not surprised to hear that line of argument. I agree that there are some improvements to the Senate bill contained in the legislation that we're now considering. But Mr. President, those changes, as you well know, are not nearly enough to justify supporting the bill, as I will explain in a few moments. I was, however, surprised to hear several senators still defending the legality of the President's warrantless wiretapping program and still arguing that Congress had somehow signed off on this program years ago because the so-called Gang of Eight group was notified. Mr. President, I thought we were well past these arguments. 2.5 years ago, after this illegal program became public, I cannot believe that we are still debating the legality of this program in the Senate floor and that anyone seriously believes that merely notifying the Gang of Eight senators and congressmen, while keeping the full Intelligence Committee in the dark, somehow represents congressional approval. Mr. President, it could not be clearer that this program broke the law and that this president broke the law. Not only that, but this administration affirmatively misled the Congress and the American people about it for years before it finally became public. So if we're going to go back and discuss these issues that I thought had long since been put to rest, let's take a few minutes to cover the full history. Here is the part of the story that somehow seems to have been forgotten. In January 2005, 11 months before the New York Times broke the story of the illegal wiretapping program, I asked then White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez at his confirmation hearing to be Attorney General whether the President had the power to authorize warrantless wiretaps in violation of the criminal law. Neither I nor the vast majority of my colleagues knew it then, but the President had authorized the NSA program 3 years before, and Mr. Gonzalez was directly involved in that issue as White House counsel. At his confirmation hearing, he first tried to dismiss my question, if you can believe it, as hypothetical, even though he knew exactly what was going on. He then testified that, quote, it's not the policy or the agenda of this President to authorize actions that would be in contravention of our criminal statutes, unquote. Well, Mr. President, the President's wiretapping program was in direct contravention of our criminal statutes. Mr. Gonzalez knew that, but he wanted the Senate and the American people to think that the President had not acted on the extreme legal theory that the President has the power as Commander-in-Chief to disobey the criminal laws of this country. The President, too, misled the Congress and the American public. In 2004 and 2005, when Congress was considering the reauthorization of the USA Patriot Act, the President went out of his way, and of course I remember this very clearly, to assure us that his administration was getting court orders for wiretaps. Court orders! All the while knowing full well that his warrantless wiretapping program was ongoing. Here's what the President said on April 20th, 2004. Quote, now, by the way, anytime you hear the United States government talking about a wiretap, it requires, the president said, it requires a wiretap, requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we are talking about getting a court order before we do so. Those are the words of the President of the United States to the American people. And again, on July 14, 2004, quote, the government can't move on wiretaps or roving wiretaps without getting a court order, unquote. And listen to what the President said on June 9, 2005. Law enforcement officers need a federal judge's permission to wiretap a foreign terrorist's phone, a federal judge's permission to track his calls, or a federal judge's permission to search his property. Officers must meet strict standards to use any of these tools, and these standards are fully consistent with the Constitution of the United States, unquote. So please, let's not pretend that the highly classified notification of the Gang of Eight, delivered while the President himself was repeatedly presenting a completely different public picture to the public, suggests that Congress somehow acquiesced to this program. As the members of this body well know, several members of the Gang of Eight at the time raised concerns when they were told about this, and several have since said they were not told the full story. And of course, all of them were instructed not to share what they had learned with a single other person. So, Mr. President, I cannot leave unanswered the arguments mounted in defense of the legality of the NSA program. I will not spend much time on the argument that the authorization for the use of military force that Congress passed on September 18, 2001 authorized this program. That argument has been thoroughly discredited in the AUMF. Congress authorized the President to use military force against those who attacked us on 9/11, a necessary and justified response to the attacks. We did not authorize the President to wiretap American citizens on American soil without going through a judicial process that was set up nearly three decades ago precisely to facilitate the domestic surveillance of spies and terrorists. Senators have also dragged out the same old tired arguments about the President's supposed inherent executive authority to violate the FISA statute. They argue that a law passed by Congress can't trump the President's power under the Constitution. Now, that argument may sound good, but it assumes what we're trying to prove, that the Constitution gives the President the power to authorize warrantless wiretaps in certain cases. You can't simply say that any claim of executive power prevails over a statute, at least not if you're serious about the rule of law and about how to interpret the Constitution. The real question is, when a claim of executive power and a statute arguably conflict, now how do you resolve that conflict? Well, fortunately, this is not something the Supreme Court has been silent about. The Supreme Court has told us how to answer the question. We're talking here about the President acting in direct violation of a criminal statute. That means his power was, as Justice Jackson said in his famous and influential concurrence in the Steele seizure case half a century ago, quote, at its lowest ebb. The presidential power, Justice Jackson said, in that circumstance, was at its lowest ebb. In other words, when a president argues that he has the power to violate a specific law, he's on pretty shaky ground. Now, that's obviously not just my opinion. It's what the Supreme Court has made clear. No less than an authority than the current Chief Justice of the United States, John Roberts, repeatedly recognized in his confirmation hearings, over and over again, that Justice Jackson's three-part test is the appropriate framework for analyzing questions of executive power. In early 2006, a distinguished group of law professors and former executive branch officials wrote a letter pointing out that, quote, every time the Supreme Court has confronted a statute limiting the Commander-in-Chief's authority, it has upheld the statute. It has upheld the act of Congress. It has upheld the act of Congress over the claims of executive power that overreach and conflict with the rights of this Congress to make the laws in this country. The Senate reports issued when FISA was enacted confirmed the understanding that FISA overrode any pre-existing inherent authority of the President. The 1978 Senate Judiciary Committee report stated that FISA, quote, recognizes no inherent power of the President in this area, unquote. And, quote, Congress has declared that this statute, not any claimed presidential power, controls, unquote. And contrary to what's been said on this floor, no court has ever approved warrantless surveillance in violation of FISA based on some theory of Article II authority. The Trung case that is so often hauled out to make this argument was a Vietnam-era case based on surveillance that occurred before, Mr. President, before FISA was enacted, so it could not have decided this issue. And the issue before the FISA Court of Review in 2002 had nothing to do with inherent presidential authorities. Yet these cases are repeatedly cited by supporters of the president, complete with large charts of the supposedly relevant quotations. But, Mr. President, the fact is that not a single court, not the Supreme Court or any other court, has considered whether after FISA was enacted, the president nonetheless somehow has the authority to bypass it and authorize warrantless wiretaps. In fact, Mr. President, as a senator from Pennsylvania and I discussed on the floor yesterday, just last week, a federal district court strongly indicated that were it to reach the issue, it would find that the president must in fact follow FISA. The court was considering whether the state secrets privilege applies to claims brought under the FISA civil liberty provisions, and it found that it does not. Its reasoning was based on the conclusion, again, that Congress had spoken clearly that it intended FISA and the criminal wiretap laws to be the exclusive means by which electronic surveillance is conducted, and had fully occupied the field in this area, replacing any otherwise applicable common law. Now, here's what the court said. Quote, Congress appears clearly to have intended to and did establish the exclusive means for foreign intelligence surveillance activities to be conducted. Whatever power the executive may otherwise have had in this regard, FISA limits the power of the executive branch to conduct such activities, unquote. And, Mr. President, another court, a district court in Michigan, also has held that the president's wiretapping program was unconstitutional, although that decision was reversed on procedural grounds by the Sixth Circuit. So, Mr. President, to the extent there is any case law that actually addresses this issue, it totally undercuts the administration's arguments. And, of course, it certainly does nothing to support those arguments. Mr. President, we've also heard that past American presidents have cited executive authority to order warrantless surveillance. But, of course, those past presidents, President Wilson and Roosevelt are often cited, were acting before the Supreme Court decided in 1967 that our communications are protected by the Fourth Amendment, and before Congress decided in 1978 that the executive branch can no longer unilaterally decide which Americans to wiretap. So those examples are simply not relevant to this debate. In sum, the arguments that the president has inherent executive authority to violate the law are baseless. It's not even a close case. And the repeated efforts here in the Senate to pretend otherwise are very discouraging. Now, Mr. President, it may seem that I'm going over ancient history because this program is no longer operating outside the law. But actually, this is directly relevant to the current debate. The bill the Senate is considering would actually grant retroactive immunity to any companies that cooperated with a blatantly illegal program that went on for more than 5 years and that the administration repeatedly misled Congress about. So if Congress short-circuits these lawsuits, we will have lost a prime opportunity to finally achieve accountability for these many years of lawbreaking. And that's why the administration's been fighting so hard for this immunity. It knows that the cases that have been brought directly against the government face much more difficult procedural barriers and are unlikely to result in rulings on the merits, so we can get to this direct question of the legality of the president's warrantless wiretapping program. These lawsuits involving the telephone companies may be the last chance to obtain a judicial ruling on the lawfulness of the warrantless wiretapping program. It's bad enough that Congress abdicated its responsibility, to hold the president accountable for breaking the law. Now it's trying to absolve those who allegedly participated in its lawlessness, in his lawlessness. Mr. President, this body should be condemning this administration for its lawbreaking, not letting the companies that allegedly cooperated off the hook. And this body certainly should not grant the government new overexpansive surveillance authorities, which brings me now to the part of the bill that in some ways concerns me even more than the immunity provision. Let me explain why I'm so concerned about the new surveillance powers granted in this bill and why the modest improvements made to this part of the bill really don't even come close to going far enough. First, Mr. President, the FISA Amendments Act would authorize the government to collect all all communications between the United States and the rest of the world. Now, that could mean millions upon millions of communications between innocent Americans and their friends, families, or business associates overseas could now be legally collected. Parents calling their kids studying abroad, emails to friends serving in Iraq, all of these communications could be collected with absolutely no suspicion of any wrongdoing at all under this legislation. Second, like the earlier Senate version, this bill fails to effectively prohibit a practice known as reverse targeting, namely wiretapping a person overseas when what the government is really interested in doing is listening to an American here at home with whom the foreigner is communicating. This bill does not have a provision that purports to address, does have a provision that sort of purports to address this issue. It prohibits intentionally targeting a person outside the United States without an individualized court order if, quote, the purpose, unquote, is to target someone reasonably believed to be in the United States. Now, this doesn't do the job, Mr. President. At best, this prevents the government from targeting a person overseas as a complete pretext for getting information on someone in the United States. But this language would allow a lot more. This language would permit intentional and possibly unconstitutional, warrantless surveillance of an American so long as the government has any interest at all, no matter how small, in the person overseas with whom the American is communicating. The bill does not include language that had the support of the House and the vast majority of the Senate's Democratic caucus that would have required the government to obtain a court order whenever a significant purpose of the surveillance is to acquire the communications of an American in the United States. The administration's refusal to accept that reasonable restriction on its power is really quite telling. Third, the bill before us imposes no meaningful consequences if the government initiates surveillance using procedures that have not been approved by the FISA court. And the FISA court later finds, Mr. President, that those procedures were actually unlawful. Say, for example, FISA court determines that the procedures were not even reasonably designed to wiretap foreigners outside the United States rather than Americans here at home. Under this bill, all of that illegally obtained information on Americans can be retained and used. Once again, Mr. President, over and over again in this really sordid tale, there are no consequences for illegal behavior by the government of the United States. Now, that's just wrong. Now, unlike the Senate bill, this new bill does not generally provide for FISA court review of surveillance procedures before surveillance begins. And that's one of the changes that's been touted by supporters of the bill. But the bill also says that if the Attorney General and the Director of National Intelligence certify that they don't have time to get a court order, that intelligence important to national security may be lost or not timely acquired, then they can go forward without judicial approval. Now, this is a far cry from allowing an exception to FISA court review in a true emergency, because arguably, Mr. President, all intelligence is important to national security, and any delay at all might cause some intelligence to be lost. So I'm concerned that this so-called exigency exception could very well swallow the rule and undermine any presumption at all of prior judicial approval. No court review. No judicial review. Let's just trust an administration, including this administration, rather than having the checks and balances that clearly the founders of our country understood to be essential in any situation like this. Fourth, this bill doesn't protect the privacy of Americans whose communications will be collected in vast new quantities. The administration's mantra has been, again, don't worry, we have minimization procedures. But, Mr. President, minimization procedures are nothing more than unchecked executive branch decisions about what information on Americans constitutes, quote, foreign intelligence. Now, that's why on the Senate floor I joined with Senator Webb and Senator Tester earlier this year to offer an amendment to provide real protections for the privacy of Americans while also giving the government the flexibility that it needs to wiretap terrorists overseas. This bill relies solely on inadequate minimization procedures to protect innocent Americans, and they are simply not enough. Now, Mr. President, as I said at the outset, some supporters of this bill have pointed to improvements made since the Senate passed the bill earlier this year. And I appreciate it that some changes have been made. But those changes are either inadequate or they do not go to the core problem. privacy issues raised by this bill. In fact, as the vice chairman, distinguished senator from Missouri of the Senate Intelligence Committee, said just yesterday, the bill before us is, quote, basically the Senate bill all over again, unquote, with only, quote, cosmetic fixes. That's what the Republican vice chairman of the committee said. And any Democrat who suggests that this somehow is a big change, frankly, I don't think must have read the bill, because it doesn't do the job. For example, I'm pleased that the bill provides for FISA court review of targeting and minimization procedures, but as I mentioned, there is a potentially gaping loophole allowing the executive branch to go forward with surveillance without court review, an exception that could swallow the rule. The bill also now explicitly directs the FISA court to consider whether the government's procedures comply with the Fourth Amendment, but that's an authority it should have had anyway. The bill includes an inspector general review of the illegal program, which is a positive change. But that doesn't make up for the lawsuits that are going to be dismissed as a result of this legislation. And I strongly support the strength and exclusivity language, which perhaps may deter a future administration from engaging in lawless behavior. But let's not lose sight of the fact that FISA, as originally enacted, clearly stated already that it and the criminal wiretap laws were already the exclusive means for conducting electronic surveillance. The idea that we would simply trust this administration, especially or any administration, to follow this exclusivity language, and they've taken this attitude toward the current exclusivity language, is absurd. This was confirmed in the strongest terms possible, again, by a federal district court just last week. Only under the unprecedented legal theories of this administration could that clear language be ignored, requiring Congress to pass language that effectively says, no, we really mean it. And if this bill is enacted, I am by no means reassured that this administration, which repeatedly broke the law and misled the public over the past 7 years, will now respect the exclusivity of FISA. Now, the bill does contain a key protection for Americans traveling overseas. It says that if the government wants to intentionally target Americans while they're outside of the country, it has to get an individualized FISA court order based on probable cause. That is a great victory. It is one we should be proud of. But it does not override the greatly expanded authorities in this bill to collect other types of communications involving Americans. In sum, Mr. President, these improvements are obviously not enough. They are nowhere close. So, Mr. President, I must strongly oppose this bill. When you consider how we got here, this legislation is particularly discouraging. We discovered in late 2005 that the President had authorized an illegal program in blatant violation of a statute, and that Congress and the public had been misled in a variety of ways leading up to this public revelation. Congress, to its credit, held hearings on the program, but was largely stonewalled by the administration for many months until the administration grudgingly agreed to brief the intelligence committees and, more recently, the judiciary committees. Nonetheless, the vast majority in the House and Senate have never been told what happened. In 2006, when the Republicans tried to push through legislation to grant massive new surveillance authority to the executive branch, we stopped it. But now, in a Democrat-controlled Congress, not only did we pass the Protect America Act, but we're now about to extend for more than 4 years these expansive surveillance powers, and we're about to grant immunity to companies that are alleged to have participated in the administration's lawlessness. President, I sit on the Intelligence and Judiciary Committees, and I'm one of the few members of this body who has been fully briefed on the warrantless wiretapping program. And based on what I know, I can promise that if more information is declassified about the program in the future, as is likely to happen, either due to the Inspector General report, the election of a new president, or simply the passage of time, members of this body will regret that we passed this legislation. I'm also familiar with the collection activities that have been conducted under the Protect America Act and will continue under this bill. I invite any of my colleagues who wish to know more about these activities to come speak to me in a classified setting. Publicly, all I can say is that I have serious concerns about how those activities may have impacted the civil liberties of all Americans. If we grant these new powers to the governments and the effects become known to the American people, we will realize what a mistake it was. Of that, I am sure. Mr. President, I hope my colleagues will think long and hard about their votes on this bill and consider how they and their constituents will feel about this vote 5, 10, or 20 years from now. I'm confident that history will not judge this Senate kindly if it endorses this tragic retreat from the principles that have governed government conduct in this sensitive area for 30 years. I urge my colleagues to stand up for the rule of law and defeat this bill. Mr. President, I reserve the balance.